get that thing where right when the music starts playing, you feel like you're going to sneeze. I'm suppressing it right now. I'm suppressing a sneeze. Happy Monday. I am Cy Killett, your host. This is Catholic Answers Live. And this hour, we got Trent Horn with us to talk about being hated. I don't know why we put those two together, like talking about being hated and you being here. But When the World Hates You is our topic this hour. 888-318-7884 is the number. And as I said, Trent Horn is our guest. Trent is an apologist extraordinaire, a speaker, and a prolific and also very helpful writer. I guess it's possible to be prolific, and that's not really much of a value. But your combination, prolific and helpful. Hello, Trent.
Hello, Cy.
See how much I had to talk to keep that sneeze from coming up?
Did you manage to suppress your sneeze?
I believe it is fully suppressed now.
Repressed.
Yes. I tamped it down.
Okay.
So can I tell you a little bit about my day before we start?
You're the host.
Okay,
go right ahead.
So my daughter had wisdom teeth out, and it didn't go very well.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to go home and sit with her because she had to take some medicine, and they wanted someone to sit with her. And so I'm sitting with her, and she's in a little bit of a medicated state and chooses to watch a TV show called A Handmaid's Tale or The Handmaid's Tale, one of those two things.
Based on the novel by Margaret Atwood.
Yes, mm-hmm. Right. Not based on a novel by a man named Lear. But,
right.
Okay, so I have to tell you, as a Christian person, felt a little bit hated. I felt like maybe the people who make this show don't really like Christians that much.
No, you just sound like one of the patriarchs who runs the Republic of Gilead.
Yeah, the Republic of Gilead. I mean, it was like a... It was like a little bit of oppression theater is what it was.
Yeah,
it was like
I have
theater of the oppressed.
Yeah, I have not watched the film. I'm familiar with the novel, A Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood, and it is a piece of dystopian science fiction literature that takes place in a future where after a nuclear war or a military coup, a bunch of patriarchal. I'm not sure. Are they Christian or not?
They're Christian. Yeah, they turned my favorite part of this whole show that we were watching was they turned the Washington Monument into a cross. They put like a cross beam across.
Right. Yeah.
So they're triumphalist Christians, I suppose.
Yeah, like triumphalist patriarchal Christians,
right,
who then proceed to live out all of their worst misogynistic fantasies, and that they not only make abortion illegal, but then because of the nuclear war, women are infertile, and so some women who are handmaidens have to engage in relations with them in a strange simulated sex act. It's just absolutely terrible. But there are people who say that we're three steps away from the Republic of Gilead.
Oh, I think there's people that think it's way less than three steps.
Yeah, that we're almost there with the way. And so what I thought would be good today is to discuss the idea of Christian persecution in the United States and what that means. Can we really say Christians suffer from persecution, especially in the Western world, the United States, when there are other places around the world where Christian churches are routinely bombed, Christians are decapitated for proselytizing their faith, are stoned to death? But just because people suffer for the faith more in other places, it doesn't follow that Christians don't suffer for sharing and living out their faith here in the United States at a lesser rate. That would be like saying, if you said, well, we should do something about poverty in America. And I said, Cy, stop whining about poverty in America. Did you know there are places around the world where people starve to death and have cholera? And, you know, there are places around the world where there is extreme poverty you do not find in the United States. But that, of course, would not nullify that you ought to do something about poverty in the United States,
right,
even though it's less severe. Much the same way if Christians are being maltreated. So a term that I use, it comes from a 7th, 8th century Irish homily, is white martyrdom. So a red martyr would be someone who spills blood for the faith. That renounce your Christian faith or you'll be executed, you'll be killed. Things that we saw in feudal Japan, ancient Rome, the Soviet Union. We don't have that here in the United States. But we do have other things where in trying to live out your Christian virtues, your Christian principles, you can be kept from, you could be made a social pariah. You could be kept from holding certain kinds of employment. Your business can be threatened to be shut down. We look at Masterpiece Cake Shop in Colorado, for example, which is now the victim of a third lawsuit attempting to shut it down.
Yeah.
These are people who are seeking to end I think it's Jack Phillips, the name of the guy who runs Masterpiece Cake Shop, people who are seeking to end his career as a baker because he does not want to make cakes for same-sex weddings or transgender reveal parties.
Or Halloween.
Yeah, he doesn't. Oh, he doesn't make Halloween cakes.
Right.
Because he has, those are his Christian principles he wants to live by. So the question is, what do we do when we try to live out our faith according to Christian principles? How do we do that when people then counter and hate us, malign us, want to persecute us, deprive us of social standing, of the ability to school our children properly? And what should we do in that regard? So how do we share the faith in a hostile world? I deal with this all the time on Catholic Answers Live, on my own podcast, Council of Trent podcast. I recently had an interview with an atheist that was extremely heated, actually. He was none too pleased, but my listeners thought I handled it with a lot of grace. And that's what we need to have when we engage people who hate us. So I can't wait to get to calls here in a sec, but the scripture verse that reminds me of this is Jesus's warning to the apostles, more of words of encouragement, really. In John 15, verses 18 through 21, Jesus says, "If the world hates you, know that it has hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love its own. But because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Remember the word that I said to you, a servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will persecute you. If they kept my word, they will keep yours also. But all this they will do to you on my account because they do not know him who sent me." So Jesus knew this would happen. We have to be faithful to him in the face of it.
888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. When the world hates you, that is our topic this hour with Trent Horn. 888-318-7884. Trent, I feel like a lot of this has come to the head, and I feel like I go back to this a lot, and I hope I'm not a broken record, but it does seem that the sexual revolution is the primary point where people decided Christianity was a problem. I mean, I don't think before that in our culture, Christianity was treated as problematic. But once the sexual revolution happened, because Christianity is a religion that is very deeply connected to the virtue of chastity and the virtues of chaste living, and of healthy family and all that.
Right.
So it does seem to me a lot of the if people feel hatred at work or, you know, when they listen to something on the cable news or something towards Christian faith, it's almost always related to the sexual revolution.
Right. And I think that we have to go back to 1968, that really the touchstone for this would be Pope Paul VI's encyclical Humanae Vitae, because that was where people were debating, is the church going to quote unquote get with the times?
Yeah.
And it clearly did not for critics. So people then saw that as a problem. I've always found that to be humorous, that I engage people all the time who I disagree with morally and theologically. So it's only in the issues though of sexual morality that I'm really accused of hate. So if I say that socialism is theft, I actually don't know very many new socialists who would say that I hate them personally, that I hate socialists. I think they're I think they're hopelessly mistaken. I think they're idealists who, as Pope Leo XIII said, do not see the world as it really is. And that's why I'm writing a book with economist Catherine Pakolic called Why Catholics Can't Be Socialists that will be slated to come out next spring. But when I say Protestants are in error about the Eucharist, that Protestants get the Eucharist wrong, for example, or that atheists are completely incorrect about reality when it comes to the existence of God, I'm not accused of hate. But when I say something like sexual behavior between two men and two women is disordered, immediately someone says I'm hateful. That's hatred. Or if I were to say, if I just quoted 1 Corinthians 6, 9 through 10,
yeah,
where St. Paul provides a litany of sins that will keep people from inheriting the kingdom of God, greed, drunkenness. If I say drunks won't get into heaven, people might be like, well, all right, they might raise an eyebrow to that.
Yeah.
But if I say people who engage in unrepentant homosexual behavior will not enter into heaven, suddenly I'm a hateful. But what's funny is even Peter Singer, the atheistic philosopher, a hat tip here to Ed Fazer for pointing this out on his blog. There was a Australian rugby player who quoted 1 Corinthians 6, 9 through 10. And people said, like, I think he suffered sanctions because of this. And Peter Singer, who is an Australian philosopher, said that saying that people who engage in homosexual behavior will go to hell, or homosexuals will go to hell, is no more hateful than saying that smokers will get lung cancer. Now, of course, Singer's an atheist. He doesn't believe in any of this stuff.
Right. He believes in lung cancer.
Right. But right. But Singer says people who think this is hateful just don't take the Christian beliefs seriously. They don't understand the gravity of what people believe when they articulate them. So that I've made this point before on the broadcast, that if I really hated someone, if I believed it as a fact that if someone engages in this sin, they will be damned, and if I really hated them, I just wouldn't say anything.
Yeah.
It'd be like if you imagine your mortal enemy, the guy who stole your wife, got you kicked out of your house, the guy you absolutely hate, and you see him riding his Segway. I don't imagine. Just to make him even more villainous, he's on a Segway.
That gives it a creepy air there. I don't know. This guy is so bad, but he's riding a Segway.
And he's going to go over a cliff, which is sad. I think actually the inventor of the Segway, the reason I thought it is because he actually, unfortunately, passed away driving over a cliff.
No, he did not.
I think he did.
Dean Kamen?
Look it up. Someone look it up and
I'm
call in.
I'm going to look that up.
But my point is, if you despise this individual and they're going to ride over the cliff, if you really, really hated them, it would be understandable for you to not say anything. I'm not saying that's right, because Jesus says love your enemies. But I'm saying if you hated him, you would do that. Not the instinct of, if you hate them, go and warn them about a danger they're going to face. What's hard is people think that it's not just the sexual revolution side. It's also the fact that people have lost sight of hell. That now the only thing Christianity really saves us from is just, you know,
not being nice.
Not being nice, a lack of well-being. When you bring up eternal damnation, it's like you thought up this thing. And now you're in trouble.
I believe Jesus mentioned that.
Quite a few times.
Yeah. All right. Well, when you are hated, or when the world hates you, is our topic this hour. Trent Horn is our guest. We do have calls, and I do want to get to those calls, but we have to take a break. We'll take that break. We'll get to those calls right after this.
Catholic Answers Live. The only thing missing from today's broadcast is you. Call now with your question.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features daily Mass, prayers, articles, and meditations in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church. On the web at magnificat.com.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
I would describe myself as a revert, and ever since I came back to a practice of my faith, I started praying the rosary, going to even daily Mass, God has led me on an amazing journey and used me in a lot of incredible ways that I never dreamed would have been possible, and I'm just so grateful to God for all of His gifts and blessings in my life.
Take Two with Jerry and Debbie, tomorrow, noon Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn, our guest this hour. And it was the guy who bought the Segway company from Dean Kamen that died in an accident. It's very unfortunate.
No, yes. I
didn't believe you when you said it. I'm sorry that just seemed
ironic.
Yeah, I guess it had a certain element of irony to it.
Indeed.
A very unpleasant irony. Guess who's here with us in studio? Did you look to your left there? Oh, it's right. Sorry. That's you right there. That's my left.
Good ones.
Hi, Erica.
Hi.
So the conference is sold out. Is that what you came to tell us, or can you still come?
It's nearly sold out.
Really?
No.
Oh. See, now I was going to believe you because I didn't believe the last thing.
But we're getting close. You guys should all come. That's all I got to say. It's going to be amazing. I'm so excited. And I'm starting to get like those nerves and excitement, because it's like 2.5 months away, less than 2.5 months away at this
point. It's going to be awesome.
I'm so excited.
CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Yes.
Is where you go. CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Wait, but you forgot to tell them the best part.
I didn't know that I was allowed to say that.
You could say it.
I think this shocked me, and I think I might have teared up a little bit.
Can I tell them the story?
Yeah, could you please tell me this?
Okay, so I run into Cy in the hallway, and I had something to tell him, and I had gone to his office before, and he wasn't there, and so I was looking for him, and I find him in the hallway having a conversation with two other employees here at Catholic Answers, and I point at him, and he goes, "What?" And I said, "I'm turning you into a cookie."
Yeah.
And he started, like, you could see the tears forming in his eyes.
This was very emotional for me.
What did you say? You said,
"This is the happiest day of my life."
This is the happiest day of my life.
Happier than the day I got married. And I still am somewhat stunned by the fact that you're turning me into a cookie.
I'm so excited about these cookies.
Do you remember the Jimmy Akin M&Ms last year?
Vaguely.
Now there's going to be cookies.
Do you remember?
And guess whose image is going to be on the cookies?
Okay, first we had the Catholic Answers cookie. It was in the shape. It was a frosted
cookie.
That
thing was so good.
And the frosting was in the shape of the Catholic Answers shield.
Right.
Then the next year, we put Jimmy Akin's face on an M&M, which was really neat.
I still ate them.
And this year, I found a company that actually creates a cookie cutter stamp. In the shape of whoever you want.
What flavor are the Cy cookies?
They're sugar cookies.
Literally made out of sugar, primarily.
Like Cy Kellett. And everyone who comes to the conference gets a Cy Kellett shaped sugar cookie.
Do you know that the heads on these cookies are bigger than the body?
Like
a bobblehead size head and a tiny little body.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like me. I have a big, giant, round Irish head. And so I already feel
the
so
problem is now if you have a cookie that looks like you, it's going to make your head even bigger. Like look at me, I'm on a cookie. That's actually true.
That's not wrong. I feel like I'm walking a little taller now.
I'm just so excited about these cookies.
Yeah, Cy Kellett cookie. I'm super excited.
So if you come to the conference, you get one? A Cy Kellett cookie, and you can eat Cy's head. You know, if you want.
No, you just made that weird.
Or maybe you can autograph the cookies. I don't know.
with a frosting pencil. I'll get a frosting pencil. Yeah. So go to CatholicAnswersConference.com. It's going to be so much
fun.
We have a ball. The speakers are unbelievable. I can go through them again if you want. Look,
from
outside of this building, Monsignor Eugene Morris. That's enough right there. Okay. Father David McConey. That's enough right there. Mm-hmm. No, but we go on. But there's more. Rod Bennett. Bishop Frank Caggiano, Father Paul Cech, and then our guys from here in the building, Tim Staples, Jimmy Akin, Carlo Broussard, all going to be there. And we're going to
You're going to be there.
I'm going to be
Father
there doing
Hugh's
the radio.
Father Hugh's going to be there. Father Hugh's going to be doing some of the masses.
What's the matter, Trent?
I am just trying to restrain my excitement.
We've never talked about the conference. At least I haven't been on the air with you when Trent is on the air with you.
Oh, really?
I've never talked to Trent about what his talk's going to be.
That's right.
I'm truly looking forward to Trent's talk.
Trent, tell us about your talk.
Oh, well, the talk is going to be about what was not in the early church, and Cy Kellett cookies are one of those.
That is not the truth.
No.
That's not what you're talking about.
No, so the theme of the conference is the early church was the Catholic Church. And so many of the speakers will be talking about the historical roots of the Catholic faith, that the first Christians practiced the universal faith, the Catholic faith. I'm going to be doing a talk on how Protestants distort this evidence, because many people become Catholic when they read the early church fathers. And I believe it was Newman who said, to be deep in history is to cease to be Protestant. Well, there's many Protestants who try to read the church fathers and interpret them in their own light. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to show how some of those quotes, when taken out of context, can seem convincing to someone who doesn't know the full background. So that's going to be a lot of fun to dive into.
It's going to be great. We have some great non-talk events. We have the show.
Yeah, twice. We're going to do the show twice.
Thursday and Friday with audience questions.
Right.
And then we have
Square Dancing with Jimmy Akin.
Square Dancing with Jimmy Akin. We have a big banquet dinner. If you purchase the full conference ticket, includes a big banquet dinner with Bishop Frank Caggiano as the keynote address at the dinner. And we have a poolside reception. We have hors d'oeuvres and a bar where everybody just gets to mingle and meet each other. You know, you're going to get to come to a conference and get to know 900 of your...
It's going to be a thousand.
You think we're going to sell it out this time?
CatholicAnswersConference.com.
CatholicAnswersConference.com.
There you go. Very good. Michael on Facebook says that if it's going to be a Cy Kellett cookie, it's going to have to be half-baked. Does that seems mean to
Boom,
me.
That was a good one.
That
was a good one. I like it.
888-318-7884 is the number. Thank you, Erica.
Thank you.
We better get to some calls here before too long. Up first is Marie in Omaha, Nebraska, listening on Spirit Catholic Radio. Marie, your question for Trent Horn.
Hi. Yeah. I have a question that is regarding specifically the hatred towards Catholics in regards to the priest abuse crisis that's going on. I'm a practicing Catholic myself, and so I find that it's hard to respond to that kind of hate and come up with a good response because, you know, I find myself being angry about it too, and so
Right. It's
kind of hard to really, you know, it's something that we can't reconcile, and so I guess I'm just looking for
sure.
how to handle that.
Yeah, so Marie, when you say hatred that you receive, do you feel like they're getting mad at you, or they're just kind of venting in your presence?
I think that it's not mad at me specifically,
sure.
but it's more of a general hatred toward the Catholic Church, and then a question to me is like, how can you support this? How can you practice in a church that does this? And and it's hard for me to respond.
Sure. I think what I always try to do, Marie, when I'm in these situations is ask questions to lead people to the point that I want to make. So, you know, I find asking questions to be helpful to diffuse hostility and help people to understand where I'm coming from instead of just giving a speech or a paragraph answer. The point I want people to get to is, if this is the church Jesus founded, I can't leave Jesus's church any more than I could leave Jesus. That would be that this is not just something that a bunch of guys in Rome came up with a few centuries ago. It's the church Jesus founded. If I can't leave, you don't leave Jesus because of Judas, as I think my colleague Tim Staples says that frequently, or you don't leave Peter because of Judas. So I think one question you might ask them is, why do you think I go to Mass? Why do you think I still go to Mass in spite of this abuse? Now, are these people who are mad at you, are they Catholic or non-Catholic?
I've experienced it from both.
Sure.
Not any practicing Catholics, but yeah.
Sure. So I might ask that you could always ask them, why do you think I go to Mass? And I mean, you could see what kind of answers they would give to you. And there you can point out to see if they get the answer right or wrong, that at the primary level, I go because it is only at the Catholic Mass that I can receive the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ, that I can receive him. And in John chapter 6, Jesus makes it clear, unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you have no life within you. Jesus gave us the Eucharist for our salvation. How can I turn my back on him just because some members of his church have failed? And so that might be one way that you could say to them, how could I do that? As if you're putting the question to them to help them to see it from your perspective. Once on the air, Marie, I remember a while back, I gave an analogy to a young man who was very mad about the church and he hadn't been to Mass in a while. And I use this analogy modified a bit. It's from St. Peter Canisius, who was a saint during the time of the Reformation, when, man, the church was there was a lot of bad stuff going on. Something like 90% of the priests couldn't read. They had concubines. It's terrible. So there was a lot of corruption there. But St. Peter Canisius, borrowing from him, I gave this analogy. And I'll ask you this, Marie. Suppose you're walking down the road and you saw a diamond, like a 1-carat solid 1-carat diamond on the side of the road, but it was in dog poo. What would you do? I know it's
a good question.
you know, a 1-carat diamond's probably worth like 10 grand.
Yes.
Would you just keep walking, or?
I know what I would do. That diamond's going home with me.
I would try to keep it.
You'd probably try to clean it off, hold your nose, clean it off, right?
Right, exactly.
So what I said to the guy was, you know, if you're willing to put up with poo for something that's worth a few thousand dollars, shouldn't we be willing to put up with bad stuff to receive something that's worth infinitely more. Second, so I think it's important to get the moral principle down, but then it's also, you should ask them, you know, well, how many priests do you think have broken their vows in this way? Surely it's a very, very small minority. And what do you want the church to do? What should the Catholic Church do in response? And you can point to things like the Dallas Charter in 2002, or the safe environment training that parishes have done. Even in Omaha, your own diocese has published lists of accused offenders to be above board. So I think you can ask them, what should the church do? And you can point to the fact the church is doing those things. Give it a chance to right these wrongs.
Marie, thanks very, very much for the call. Darren and I are going to work with Trent on his analogies during the break, and we'll come back with some that are less disgusting. Right after
this.
Won't
be as on point, though.
Looking for an on-fire Catholic speaker for your event? Catholic Answers speakers will inform and inspire your audience to grow in their Catholic faith. For more information on booking a Catholic Answers speaker, visit CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com today.
In his new audio presentation, The Very First Fathers, apologist Jimmy Akin takes you on a tour of the earliest Christian writings outside the New Testament. From the most famous figures and most notable works to those lesser known but no less important, this pivotal time in the development of the early church is revealed in fascinating detail. Jimmy shows how, even in the first century after the resurrection, it was necessary to defend and explain truths that are still under attack today, such as the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist and the perpetual virginity of Mary. The Very First Fathers is a compelling look at the dawn of the Christian age and edifying listening for anyone who wants to understand and defend the full truth of Catholicism. Order your copy of The Very First Fathers today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Love and beauty. As a little girl, Dawn Eden Goldstein knew that she wanted those things, that in them somehow she would find God. Over the years as a rock journalist, she moved among some of popular music's best-known artists, straining to capture that transcendent love and beauty in every note and lyric. In Sunday Will Never Be the Same, Dawn recounts her spiritual journey in beautifully wrought detail, mixing powerful accounts of trauma, healing, and epiphany with funny anecdotes from inside the music scene. It is the rare conversion story that delights as it inspires, amuses as it edifies, and ultimately lays before the reader a lived testimony to the transforming grace of Christ. Order your copy of Sunday Will Never Be the Same by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
This is Deacon Harold Burke Sivers. The Morning Glory team asked the question, changing the rules? Priestly ordination in the Amazon. Tomorrow morning, 7 Eastern. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
When the world hates you, that's our topic this hour. Christians around the world are hated and reviled in various places and suffer terrible persecution in some countries. We hear about, especially in the recent, in the last decade, how China has reverted to pretty open persecution of Christians in some of the provinces, and many of the provinces of China, actually. What happens to Christians in places like North Korea and in Pakistan is really unspeakable. And I think you'd be hard-pressed to find Christians returning that favor in anywhere, although I'm sure that there are places where Christians are ill-behaved. Around the world, Christians face persecution. Maybe in the United States, if we were going to be careful with our language and our claims, we would say there's an element of harassment. There's an element of a growing desire, I think, to persecute Christians, but certainly a sense of greater and greater discomfort with being public in one's Christianity in the United States. And so we talk this hour about what to do when the world hates you with Trent Horn, our apologist here at Catholic Answers, the author of many books, including Why We're Catholic and his most recent Counterfeit Christ. He's also the podcaster behind the Council of Trent, and you can find that at Trent Horn podcast.com. Trent, you ready to just go back to calls? We got a bunch.
Let's do it.
All right, let's go to Joe in Chicago. He's listening on the Catholic Answers app. Joe, your question for Trent Horn.
Hi, Trent. I just recently listened to your podcast with the atheist guy, with that old guy. My question basically is, like, how did you be able to, like, keep your cool and everything and not get so angry? Because I'm a philosophy student. I'm a philosophy and theology student.
Oh, great.
And, like, his arguments were garbage. Like, they were just not very good. They're not very intelligent. It seems like he got it from atheist website, doc, whatever atheist website he looked from.
Sure.
And I was so surprised that, like, you were just, like, you could just sit there and just take that from him. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, what I've tried to do on my podcast at trendhornpodcast.com is to, one, offer my own reflections on current events, on philosophy, apologetics, Catholic theology, to equip people to share their faith. And one way I've tried to do that recently to model that for people is to have people on the show who disagree with me on a variety of aspects of the Catholic faith. I've got two more conversations scheduled soon, one on abortion with an atheist blogger, and the next on Sola Scriptura with a Protestant who's been a longtime follower of my work. And the one thing I like doing on the podcast is we have these conversations on Catholic Answers Live sometimes, but due to the constraints of live radio, I can't stay with people very long. And these conversations take a while to tease out. There was my conversation with Tom Rafferty, and people can go online to listen to it. He was certainly, I think aggressive would be a fine term to describe his tone with me. And he was definitely combative. But I think what we have to understand in these conversations to maintain a peaceful demeanor is to know where you want to go in the conversation and ask for help from God to get there. So we need to always be people of prayer, to pray before these difficult conversations, to pray during them, and even after them, that God's truth will fall on people's hearts, and hardened hearts will be unhardened to receive it. But one thing I did, if you listen to the conversation with Tom Rafferty, was I tried to ask him questions to get at the roots of his beliefs and show there are some logical contradictions in there. And sometimes he responded somewhat forcefully back to me. But you always have to remember, you don't want to respond in kind. Never, ever, ever get angry back at the person. You might have this deep feeling inside, oh, I really want to show them. I really want to show this person. And you know what? It's okay to give into that feeling. St. Paul kind of talks about this letter to the Romans. He says that when you are kind to an enemy, it is like heaping hot coals on their head. It drives them crazy when you are kind in response. So you can kind of almost get at someone, not maliciously, but help them to see they're the ones who've worked themselves up and they have a incoherent view, by being kind in response. So when I'm in these conversations on Catholic Answers Live or on my podcast, and someone is aggressive with me, how to keep my cool, I want to know where I'm going. So before I get into a conversation, I know if it's about abortion, I want to get to the question, what are the unborn? If it's about atheism, I want to get to the question, what is your evidence against God and what's wrong with the arguments for God? I want you to defend those claims. Hopefully in a future book, I'll write all this down, I think. So I always try to get to a certain, when I know where I'm going in a conversation, I'm less tense. I think people are more apt to get defensive and angry when they feel lost in the conversation. So knowing where you want to go, and part of that comes from just learning the faith and learning the arguments. When you know where you want to go, you're a lot more at ease. Then you ask questions, you make them defend their view. And then you understand that even just by being quiet, if they're trying to steamroll you, as the Christian apologist Greg Kokel says, let them run out of steam. They get angry, angry, angry. And I think even if they keep going on and on, you can always gently shame them. That's a term I like, that you don't have to be a doormat to be calm with people. You don't have to let people walk over you. You can gently shame. You could say, I would like to talk about this, and I don't think you, it sounds like you don't want to have a dialogue with me if you're just kind of yelling at me. Do you want to have a real conversation? Sometimes especially on the pro-choice shows, I'll have people who, they'll give an answer, and I know there's a little dig in the question, almost like an insult to me or the faith. And I'll ask them point blank, do you want to have a serious conversation? Because I do. So here, it's about walking that fine line between being assertive without being aggressive. So those are some pointers I would offer. Would you Any other thoughts or like any other,
No, yeah, that was really great, actually. It really helped me. Thanks so much.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you, Joe. Thanks very, very much. 888-318-7884 is our number. We're talking about when the world hates you. I mean, in a certain sense, as with the citation you gave us at the beginning of the show, there has to be some rejoicing when the world hates us for our faith. I mean, with Jesus being clear that if they treated the master that way, why should they treat the servant any better?
Right. It's not something that we shouldn't seek out persecution for its own sake, but we shouldn't be afraid of it. And we also have to avoid the temptation. Now, sometimes online, people will say that Christians have a persecution complex or a martyrdom complex. And so here we have to be careful that we don't do things that are actually immoral or wrong or just imprudent. Yeah. And then when people call us out on that, to say that we are being persecuted, for example.
Yeah.
So for example, if you are a Christian school teacher in a public school and you want to lead a prayer with your students, and then the school says, you can't do that, and you get in trouble, you say I'm being persecuted, that's not a wise thing to do, because if the school were in its right accord, they would also tell a Muslim teacher or a Jewish teacher or a Hindu teacher that you can't lead a prayer with your students. So you have to be careful not to cry persecution when you're asking for unequal treatment. But it's fair to say, without whininess or wanting, you know, undue attention, to say, people should be concerned about this. I'm trying to live out my faith, and the state is not allowing me to do so. It's putting up these obstacles, whether it's here in the U.S. or abroad. On my podcast, I have an episode that's going to go up tomorrow where I talk about how people have transgender ideology imposed on them. I shared a video of a student in Scotland whose teacher takes him outside of the class, ejects him from class for saying there are only two genders, men and women. It's biological. And the teacher says, you can have that opinion, but keep it to yourself. You're in trouble because you're telling that to other people. To me, really? He said, that's not the policy of the national schools.
Yeah.
The policy is there's more than two genders. And so here, you're not to say, hey, other people, and the student says, you get to express your views, why can't I express mine? Try to look for genuine double standards and call them out when appropriate.
Could I share one with you?
Sure.
Up at the University of California, Berkeley, maybe 5-6 years ago, this young woman is on the welcoming team, you know, like for the incoming freshmen. So she's on the, hey, welcome to UC Berkeley team. And she's wearing a cross around her neck.
Right.
Right. It's not a crucifix. She's just wearing a cross.
So right.
The dean of students says to her, as long as you're representing the university, you can't wear that cross. And she said,
then I would say, I'm just kidding. Then that's where, instead of crying persecution, you should go for the double standard immediately and say, well, but dean, I have a question. If I had a Jewish volunteer with me, would you tell him he can't wear his yarmulke?
Yeah,
if I had a Muslim volunteer with me, would you tell her she can't wear a hijab?
But what struck me was that this is the dean of students who doesn't even know the basic laws of religious freedom in the United States. Doesn't even know that what he did is against the law.
So I have been on campuses where students have told me it violates church and state for there to be a Christian club on campus. That the university...
They just don't even understand their own country.
They don't understand that separation of church and state. People nowadays think that it was designed to keep the church from taking over the state. Primary reason. The primary reason, the state does not have to fear the church. The church has always had to fear the state. The state is the one with the guns and the prisons. You know, when you look in the history of the church has always, it's been more in danger from the state than the other way around.
We have most of the lace, though.
Most of the what?
Lace.
The lace?
Yeah. Do you know what lace is like when they put on an altar or they put on a said fabric?
Yeah, I'll say, the shock troops are coming. Sigh, they have mace. Don't worry, Trent. We have lace and incense. That's the point that I would bring up when you're going through to look for the double standards, to be able to identify them. Although ironically, I would say even when it's been quote unquote benevolent. So separation of church and state has actually been a good thing for the church in America. When you look at churches in Europe, for example.
Like Germany.
Germany, that are national churches, both countries that have national churches and churches that receive stipends from the government. Mm-hmm. So you know, to be Catholic, you have to register with the government. Some of your tax dollars go. The churches there are dying. They're shrinking because they have required so much from the state. There was a saint, I'd have to look it up here later. I quoted it in my socialism book. Dorothy Day, I know you have a fondness for Dorothy Day. You've done some reading and studying.
Yeah, I love Dorothy Day, yeah.
She quoted, people always think like she was just some, you know, hippie. 1930s hippie or socialist, and she was not. She was very skeptical of state intervention, and she once quoted, St. Hilary of Poitiers, I believe, St. Hilary, who said, the less we ask of Caesar, the less we must expect from Caesar. Right. As the sense of, let's not ask too much of Caesar so we don't have to have Caesar encroach on our lives.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. All right, well, there's more callers. I'm sorry I've made you wait, but we've got to take a quick break. We'll be right back to take your calls on When the World Hates You with Trent Horn right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
We're glad you're with us. Stick around for more Catholic Answers Live.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
You know, I have a very hard time sometimes, and I'm so frustrated. I mean, frustrated. Somebody says, how'd you do all this, Mother? I say, I didn't. And they look at me. Huh? The Lord did. God does everything. Without me, he said, you do nothing.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious mystic monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All mystic monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase mystic monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn, our guest this hour. Hey, next hour, Don Eden Goldstein's going to be here. Don's written one of the best kind of spiritual memoirs that's been written in a long time. Sunday Will Never Be the Same. A rock and roll journalist opens her ears to God. And we're going to have a little bit of Monday afternoon fun with Don. We're going to talk a bit about 1960s music. And actually, you'll be surprised. Don will share how Jesus played a role in some of the music that you remember from the 1960s. And we'll then talk about if there's any hope for pop culture actually being something that can open people to Jesus rather than closing them off to him as The Handmaid's Tale does. Well, I don't know. I've only seen two episodes of The Handmaid's Tale, but it seemed like something that would invite you to be a Christian.
Yes.
Let's go to, who was up next? It's Nathan in Traverse City, Michigan. Nathan, you have a question for Trent Horn?
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. So my question was sometimes when I'm at a social event with, I guess, classmates, not necessarily friends.
Sure.
Sometimes when they're talking, they'll just start, you know, dissing and bad-mouthing the Catholic Church, and Catholicism in general. And I'm not really sure, if I should stand up against it, how I should, and how to do that without coming across as just self-righteous.
Yeah, what do you, Nathan, think it means to be self-righteous? What are you concerned about?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure if I'm using self-righteous right, but
yeah, just tell me what you're worried about.
Yeah, I want to be able to come across as just a normal person so that I can possibly, you know, share the faith with people,
right.
not seem like a stingy old Catholic.
Sure. I always love getting ideas for books. That's a great subtitle, actually. I'm going to write Evangelism 101 subtitle: How to Come Off as a Normal Person.
It's actually not a bad goal.
No, it's not. And I think I see you're coming from, Nathan, that, you know, and I've been in these situations too, actually, especially shortly after my conversion, which took place about. Well, this is funny. Now that I'm 34, I've spent half my life being Catholic. So 17 years ago, I became Catholic. And during that time, now my life has changed a lot since then, for the better, obviously. But back then, I had a lot more non-Catholic friends, and I'd spend a lot of time with them. And they knew I was Catholic, but they would say these kinds of things, or they would rip into the church in front of me. And some of them would kind of do it to get a rise out of me. So I think there's two extremes we're trying to navigate here. One is just to be a doormat who just is like, oh, I don't care. Ha ha, yeah, the church is so lame sometimes, and we're not sticking up for our faith. We don't want to do that. But the other is to come across as being overly sensitive or whiny, or that we don't know how to take criticism well. You know, that we come across as almost defensive, which isn't a good way to come across. That if you come off defensive to people when they make fun of the church, that can be seen as an admission, a tacit admission, you don't fully believe this is true. Like, you get worked up when people criticize the faith and you get angry and defensive in response. Some people may interpret that as, oh, this person doesn't know how to give us a good answer. They're just being defensive. They're worried that we're actually right. So I think a better approach is to calmly and assertively call them out on what they're doing. And I've been in these situations before with non-Catholic friends. So if they make a joke at the Catholic faith, you could make a kind of a sarcastic comment that borders on passive aggressive, like, oh, I'm sure a Catholic would never be offended by that, you know, or to say something like that. So it depends on your temperament and the temperament of the people with you. That's one approach. The other is just to ask a very honest question, like, well, why do you think this about the church, or what do you think the church should do? Just to actually, and of course, as I say, this depends on people's temperament. Some people are okay with a sarcastic approach to get conversations going. Not everyone can wield sarcasm. It's like the surgeon's knife. You got to wield it wisely. You could just ask a very honest question, like, well, what did you mean by that? I just really want to understand where you're coming from when you say this. And as I said earlier in the show with Cy, to point out when somebody attacks our faith or attacks the church, keep on the lookout for a double standard. You can ask that in the form of a question, like, would you say the same thing about a Muslim, or would you say the same thing about a Jewish person? Do you think that's okay to say about Catholics? I just really want to know. And then it doesn't come off as defensive. You're coming off as somebody who cares about the truth, and you want to hold people accountable for the things they say because you care a lot about your faith. It matters to you. So those might be a few different approaches that I would take. Is that helpful? Do you have any other questions, or...
No, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Okay, yeah, no problem. And I'd also recommend on our website at shop.catholic.com, I have a DVD called Three Secrets to Sharing the Faith that goes over that Socratic questioning approach. That might also be helpful for you. So I hope that's helpful, and thank you for calling in.
Thank you very, very much. Let us go now to Joseph in New Orleans, listening on EWTN. Joseph, you with us?
Oh, hello, gentlemen. It's very instructional listening to these techniques of conversation you are teaching us. Anyway, my question is, I have experienced anger even from Catholics regarding migrants and nuclear disarmament. So I'm standing with the Pope, who says that no country has the right to hermetically seal itself from migrants. And I'm standing with the Pope again and with the Vatican for total nuclear disarmament for every country. And so, yeah, I would appreciate some, you know, your insight.
Sure. I think that's a helpful insight I'm happy to get into, Joseph. What have people been mad about, in the sense that why in particular were they angry at you because you said these things?
Yeah, with the migrants, you see, because I think they are missing the big picture.
Right.
Because, well, I'm from Europe, okay. And there is a big problem with the migrants in Europe. But people are missing the big picture, that these people got their homes destroyed, you know, like they did not start on this journey just, you know, looking for an adventure. That's right. One point. And the other thing with the nuclear arms, people are totally dismissing the fact that Hiroshima and Nagasaki were war crimes, and we cannot trust the government not to commit war crimes, mm-hmm. and we will be guilty of war crimes.
Okay, sure. Joseph, let me weigh in on those two things. So I think what's also important when we share our faith with other people, that people can be angry in response, we have to make sure that we're presenting exactly what the church teaches. That way what they're angry at is church teaching and not a particular presentation of it. So for example, when you mentioned about immigration, I think you're absolutely right that one view that a country cannot take is that migrants have no right whatsoever to try to find a better life for themselves, and that a state should never consider the interests of immigrants. That's not a position a Catholic could hold. But from there, the span of different policies, the range of policies one could take on immigration reform or immigration policies, it's somewhat broad, and it will depend on different countries, whether you're in Europe, the United States, how many immigrants the country can take in. So I would recommend that when you're in these conversations to point people to the Catechism, first on immigration, that'd be paragraph 2241, that talks about how political authorities, the prosperous nations are obliged to the extent they are able to welcome the foreigner in search of security. So say, look, if you're Catholic, this is what the church teaches on immigration. It's not one or the other. Nations should accept people as they are able to, in accord with the common good. When it comes to nuclear weapons, you could always point them to paragraph 2315 that talks about the accumulation of arms. It doesn't talk about nuclear weapons in specifics, but the arms race usually refers to nuclear weapons. Here, the church does not say that as a policy, nations must unilaterally disarm and get rid of nuclear weapons. All it says is that this method of deterrence gives rise to strong moral reservations, and that it's something that we should seriously consider in the dangers that are involved in it. So it involves a prudential judgment. So as I said before, I would recommend paragraphs 2315 and 2241 in the Catechism. When you're in these discussions, that way you're asked them, what do you think of these texts? And you're going off what the church teaches on that and its social doctrine. So I hope that's helpful and glad you called in.
Thanks, Joseph. Let's go real quick to who's up next? We'll go to Christopher in Duluth, Minnesota. Christopher, your question or point for Trent.
What I have noticed is, my perception of hate is that when I've seen a lot of people who have hated or disliked, I've seen more contempt than hate. There are people that hate, but I've seen a lot more contempt
sure.
lately. That it's not that people, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong,
sure.
but that more people think that they are more or less above you, that you're beneath them.
Yes, that's an excellent point, Christopher.
Yeah,
I think you're right on the money on that.
Sure.
You know, and my issue is, my question is not why do people feel that way, but why do they think that way? Why is it that they have so much contempt that they think that they're better than you?
Well, I think that's part of that. Yeah, let me get to that before we run out of time here, Christopher. I think that's part of human nature. Proverbs 16:18 says, pride, I love the older translations, pride goeth before the fall or before destruction. That as human beings, we want to elevate ourselves. That's what Adam and Eve did in the garden. That's what human beings do. Catholics, we have a temptation to want to say, oh, well, I'm Catholic. I have the fullness of faith. I'm better than you. People who think they have the fullness of truth, whether they're Catholic or not, have a temptation to be prideful in that regard. And as Catholics, we should not be proud of that. We should be humble about the message we have been entrusted with, and then humbly share it to those who take pride in their own errors. And I think that's the best way for us to share the gospel, to remember that if people hate us, we want them to hate us for the truth, not for something obnoxious that we're doing.
Christopher, thank you very, very much. Thanks to everybody who called. Hey, next hour, Don Eden Goldstein's going to be here. I think you're really going to enjoy this for a summer Monday afternoon. Trent Horn, thank you very much. I feel like we could have done a couple hours on this.
We could have. It was fun, so.
Yeah, and I'm going to hate you less now. No, that's not right. I didn't mean it that way. Less contempt.
Any improvement is always good in my book.
Thanks, Trent. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.